How's it going, everyone? And welcome to the biggest sports show in TO, Sports from the Six. I'm Flip Livingstone, along with my beautiful co-host, Joe Narsa, here with you for episode number 26, where today we're going to be trying a new few things out for all y'all, spicing it up a bit for all our listeners out there. Today we dive into the masterpiece that was Garrett Sparks' debut for the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Jays signed a lefty. No, not the one everyone wanted, but we discussed the new arrival to the Blue Jays rotation. And we have our inaugural Flips Pick segments for all you puckheads out there. We close up the show by hitting the hard court and chat Raptors as well as Kobe Bryant's retirement. Finally. Joe Narsa, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good. It was an interesting day in Leafland, definitely, when a guy with a dog on his mask wearing number 31 stole the show in Toronto. We haven't seen that happen in quite some time.
That's true.
But Garrett Sparks, A, looked fantastic in that with those checkerboard Trevor Kidd ode in his pads were fantastic. The guy looked the swaggiest you could be. And a big shout-out to him also because he is the leader of my Facebook group, Goalie Gear. The word in the middle I'll leave out, S United. They are a fantastic following. The guy looked fantastic.
We're throwing plugs out already.
You got it. You got to start off hard with the plugs.
Yeah,
self-promotion. Sure, exactly. Get the follows ASAP.
Yes.
It was fantastic to watch Garrett Sparks
put
on that performance. And you know what the best part was? It wasn't boring. It wasn't routine. It was actually very exciting. That save he made, tapping the puck away with his stick on Taylor Hall, he didn't look as, you know, structurally sound as a goalie would want to be, but being a Leaf legend for the rest of your life because you are in the history books is something to definitely be happy about.
I'm pretty sure most Leafs fans are already planning the parade, and I think, like, they're chiseling out a Garrett Sparks statue out front of the ACC.
Definitely.
In all seriousness, it was an amazing thing to watch. Just from the perspective that I always talk about on this show is from the Toronto sports fan perspective, and more specifically, obviously, the Toronto Maple Leafs sports fan perspective, which has been a very sad perspective. We've been over it. But I mentioned to you before the show that what hit me was when I listened to the Joe Bowen call on the radio.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
He was so genuinely excited and happy for the kid. I haven't heard a call, like I said it to you before, I haven't heard a call like that from Bowen or from any guy calling a Leaf game since they were in the playoffs against Boston 4 years. Is it 4 years ago now?
Yeah.
And that's saying something because it's been sad, sad times in Leafland. And like you said, maybe not the most sound, technically sound performance.
No.
But I loved his confidence. Didn't he look confident in there?
You know what's great about him? He looks very big. He doesn't come out of his crease. He make sure to rely on his skill and his ability to catch the puck to be there. His positioning is very Lundqvist-esque.
Mm.
He stays deep.
I like that comparison.
Right, very solid.
I'll take that comparison.
Yeah, comparison to probably.
Did you
arguably.
Hear that, Leaf fans? You heard it here
He's
first
Lundqvist.
From Joe Narsa. It's a Lundqvist lookalike. Give him six games and he'll be there.
Yeah, exactly. He might have to snip the hair, though. Got to slick it back.
Okay,
fly.
Seven games.
You got to cut the hair.
Yeah.
But you saw a confident goalie. He played his game. He didn't get rattled by it. And the nice thing was there was times where the team supported him and there was times where he supported the team, which is the way it works. Phaneuf stopped the puck basically fluttering into the net. But, you know, Hunwick had that giveaway. The Leafs made sure he earned that shutout. But he also helped the Leafs ensure that they got that win. And that's really all you can expect from your goaltender. But to do that in your first game ever in the NHL, guys don't realize that this guy was in the ECHL last year when me, you, and Ali Khan were covering the Brampton Beast.
Like, shout out the Orlando Solar Bears.
And with the he was with the Orlando Solar Bears. And it's ridiculous to see. I mean, it's funny because James Reimer had the same type of climb where he went from the East Coast and he ripped it up in the AHL and then he came to the Leafs and, you know, he caught fire.
Right.
But it was a fantastic moment to watch. And that interview after, just unreal.
The interview, the raw emotion from a 22-year-old kid like that, and for the stat to be thrown at him that he's the first rookie goaltender to make his debut with the Leafs and to earn a shutout in the victory, and he's got no response. To see the emotion from this kid that he actually cares about what he's doing, we haven't seen that from a single Leafs player, I want to say, since Matt Sundin, who's really bled blue and white. It's his first game, and is he a Matt Sundin? Of course not. But just to see the passion on the kid's face after one start, it's got to be a good sign moving forward for Leafs fans.
You see, the thing is, too, for a lot of us who are, I think there's about 20,000 people in that goalie group, and he's not just a guy who runs it, he's a key contributor. He does a GGSU goalie camp. He is constantly posting. He went out and posted.
So it's a group for young goalies?
For goalies in general.
Goalies in
and
general.
And all we do is show off our gear. We talk about the game. And what's amazing is the 33 minutes after that game was done, Garrett Sparks posted on goalie gear.
Yeah, he's huge into social media, I've found. Yeah. I've read up on him a little bit. And he's definitely been active on Twitter throughout his career coming up. Started with the Guelph Storm, was really active then. His last year with the Storm, he set a club record for shutouts, wins, and one other big stat. Maybe
save percentage.
And so, you know, the caliber is there. It's just his path has been a little bit different. Does that mean he can't be a solid NHL goaltender? No. But got to also realize who they beat last night. Edmonton is not a solid team, especially without McDavid. So I just like to make that point, you know, just to make the point.
Well, I mean, too, the thing with Garrett Sparks is he bleeds hockey. It's not something that he clearly didn't understand, and that's, I think, why the emotion was there. I read an article about Sparks saying that he always knew he had the talent, and he didn't believe that he needed more until last year when he wound up from a Leaf prospect to... This is why you were a 7th-round pick. Welcome to the coast, and we'll see where you go. And he realized the work ethic needs to be there.
For sure. I think
that's what's fantastic. I think that's what the emotion was, and that Garrett Sparks had a coming of circle going from, I know I can do it, to, wow, I can't just rely on my skills. I need to work at it. And, oh, wow, look, work actually proves that you can be better. It was just a fantastic moment.
And let's be clear, the ECHL is kind of where most goalies go to die.
It's a tough league for them to play.
Right?
I mean,
there's like a lot of travel, a lot of hours on.
They play five games in 7 nights sometimes.
There you go, and they get peppered with pucks.
Right, and like, defensive structure is not.
I don't think defense is high up in the ECHL. It's like the East Coast Q.
Yeah,
NJHL.
It's tough. Yeah, I know what you mean.
So I'd like to see some more games out of them. Obviously,
for sure.
You know, and maybe against some tougher spots in terms of like some road games, maybe some more meaningful games, who knows, but it's got to be a huge positive, right? They're searching for answers in net. Reimer's, but we've talked about Reimer, but they're still searching for answers in net. And I think, you know, the next thing that I want to ask you about and talk about is Bernier's behavior, reaction, attitude to this whole thing. And I was a big Bernier fan coming into this, even this year.
Yeah.
I still supported Bernier, and I still thought he was the number one, even up until like a month ago.
Yeah.
And the way he's carried himself in the last few weeks, the way he's acted in the media, just his general body language is really pissing me off.
See, I don't know. I think I take the vice versa in that because...
Interesting.
One, I'm actually a firm believer that Bernier is the best goalie in the Leafs system right now. I think
that's still fair.
I think Jonathan Bernier has all the makings of what goaltenders want to become.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking on the drive-in, look at goaltenders that are excelling, not even at the upper echelon. I'm talking about, like, solid starters that can get you there.
Okay.
Ben Bishop.
Right.
Very sloppy early on in his career.
Agreed.
Andre Pavlik, very sloppy early on in his
career. Still kind of sloppy.
Right, but he's definitely the number
one.
Then you have Kari Lehtinen, 5 to 6 years of mediocrity, who is now fighting for a number one job, and his numbers have been there, been better than what they have.
He's been better than Niemi this year. It's just he just got hurt again.
Now, again, let's look at somebody that has won 2 Stanley Cups and most people don't give any credit to, in Corey Crawford. They say he's got a lot of deficiencies in his game. Crawford has developed into a better goalie. Mm-hmm. You look at a lot of goaltenders in the NHL, it doesn't take them 100 games. I mean, Carey Price at one point needed to be traded in Montreal. Halak was the man. There's changes in the league, and the guy's only played 180 games. He's got a lot more to give.
So with all that being said, you still think that he has his best days ahead of him?
100%, especially because I looked at Jonathan Bernier might not be the best verbalizer of his emotions.
No, he's terrible with carrying himself in the media.
Agreed. However, the one thing I'm a fan of is he's pissed off, he's frustrated, and he's not happy about where he is right now.
Okay.
Those are all three things we want to see in a goalie. Yeah, you want to see in an athlete.
You want to see the passion, but did you see his reaction last night after Sparks got the win?
No, he came and hugged him.
Yeah, but did he?
Yeah, he was the first guy there. He jumped off the bench. He went and he hugged him. He, like, shook his head. And then after,
he said no comment to when they asked him what he thought about Sparks' performance or
really?
Something. Yeah, he brushed off a comment about the performance of
him. I didn't hear that. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, it was post-game, and they were talking. I forget who was commentating the game last night, but they were just saying how, like, you shouldn't be a teammate like that. And we'll get it up on Twitter to clarify, but it was said he blew off a comment about Sparks.
Yeah.
Because he was pissed off.
Was it like Sparks going to play? Do you think Sparks was going to play in Winnipeg? Or?
No, I think it was more so he had already been asked a few.
Oh.
And then he was just like, you know, like next question.
Did he laugh it
question.
Off?
I didn't see it yet.
Okay, because, you know, it'd be funny if it was like a no comment and then laughs it off. Like, okay, this guy's a superstar.
Yeah, agreed. And I'm, you know, I could be making more of something. Then
that's our job.
Exactly. But the point was made last night, just the way he's carrying himself, the way that his body language is, you know, you could take it both ways. Yeah. Maybe he's pissed and that's a good sign because you know, he wants to be better.
It's a fine line. Right?
I hope that's the case.
Yeah.
I really do because, you know, I don't want to see a guy struggle.
Right.
And they had Kelly Rudy on Sportsnet last night talking about this and how he went from one of the best goalies in the league to being literally the worst goalie in the league.
Right.
And he said it's the most lonely feeling in the world. You know better than most, goaltending is difficult.
No, it's definitely tough. You can feel yourself deflating a bench. It's the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah, so I feel for the guy, not too much, because he's crying on millions and a beautiful wife.
Yeah, 4.1 mil a year.
But I still want to see him succeed, and I hope you're right. I hope his best days are ahead of him, but everything I've seen from him this year, especially his attitude and behavior, is really starting to bother me, and I hope that he just either A, sucks it up and shuts up, or starts playing better. There's only two options there that are going to work out good for him.
Yeah.
Is he shuts up and becomes a good teammate and sucks up the role as being a backup and plays okay.
Yeah.
Or he starts playing good again and earns his way back into the first spot. I don't see any other options.
Well, the other thing, too, is it almost seems like the bad attitude is a key characteristic of all French-Canadian goaltenders.
And maybe that's why
his favorite goaltender of all time is Patrick Waugh.
Maybe I'm Don Cherrying it a bit here with, like, oh, it's a French-Canadian goaltender with attitude.
Yeah.
But I'm really trying not to. And maybe it's just after seeing such a humble, honest, raw emotion performance from Garrett Sparks and then his emotion show.
Yeah.
And then you have Bernier going no comment.
Yeah.
So maybe it's unfair.
And I think that's one of the biggest contributors to the argument for guys liking Bernier versus Reimer, Reimer versus Bernier. I feel like the puckhead and I feel like the goalies say Bernier's the better. I feel like the hockey fan and the Leaf fan loves James Reimer. It's James Reimer is such a thrilling story. The guy started playing hockey at 13 years old, playing church hockey with his dad because he was the tallest kid, and his dad's buddy's like, why don't we throw him in net? Our goalie didn't show, worst guy.
Right.
And then the guy goes up and climbs this ladder, doesn't swear, team guy, family man, like great, you know, great background, and he's just the nicest person. And then you look at Bernier and what you get out of him in the media, it's probably, I think, one of the biggest parallels between both goalies. And I think that's part of the reason why you gotta love James Reimer's attitude and personality.
He didn't know who Nelson Mandela was.
Oh, that was
like not to rehash old things, but he was at the Africa Night fundraiser for Africa. At the Raptors game.
He was a leader on and off the ice.
Yeah, he was a leader on and off the court. He thought he was a basketball player.
No, he said ice.
Oh, my God.
He made him a hockey player.
So anyway, you can YouTube Jonathan Bernier's response to the Mandela question. He thought he was an athlete. So maybe that just speaks to my bias towards him as like a bit of a dink. But all that being said, I hope what you said comes true.
Yeah.
That his best puck is ahead of him.
So we have 30 seconds on the hockey.
We're going tight on the times, and we're going to be regimented to segments.
Right.
Stay tuned.
So 30 seconds on the hockey.
Now I'm 29.
For the Edmonton Oilers, do you trade one of these young guys and try and change up this core? Because that was just, it's not working.
Yes.
Okay.
I trade one of them for sure, just because of also what I've seen now from Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
it's a pretty much a real deal thing with him.
Do you have a guy that you would key in, would be like, this was the guy that can get me what I want?
I just, in my opinion, yep. I keep Taylor Hall.
Right.
Other than that, trade some guys. Maybe Leon Draisaitl, just because he's had such a good start.
Yeah.
His stock's probably highest. Then I'd go Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. Who would you trade? Would you trade?
I would 100%.
You have
I would
to.
Trade.
You need a goalie.
I would 100% trade. And
A defenseman.
Yeah, and funny enough, in our segment that we teed up the Canadian team in the NHL, I said Cam Talbot won't be able to do it in Edmonton because that decor is terrible. I think Jordan Eberle is the guy you deal because he's not a first overall pick. And Jordan Eberle has the things that hockey coaches and hockey GMs are looking for. He's clutch. He's got the right mentality.
Definitely clutch.
He's a winner. And I think he's the one that's going to give you the most value without embarrassing the organization.
We're going to extend the 30-second timeline to ask you this.
See, no tight lines.
I can't,
it's
man.
Okay.
Tight lines just
it's okay.
don't do well.
Don't worry. We're just moving on to the Blue Jays, and they're deflating. So 5 minutes on that.
But what I wanted to ask was, since we're talking about it, and now I forget what I was going to ask you.
I said Jordan Eberle.
Jordan Eberle.
There you go.
Don't you think he would look good in a Leaf uniform?
He'd look fantastic. Just
okay,
that
I just wanted
off.
To throw that.
Well, you know what's funny? I was crunching the numbers. Dion Phaneuf's on pace for 50
points.
Wait,
you didn't get the stat guy to crunch the numbers?
No,
stat guy.
I'm the stat guy. This guy, honestly,
yeah,
I don't even know why he shows
yeah,
up.
Yeah, he's the worst.
I was crunching numbers because stat guy took another day off.
Worst.
And Dion Phaneuf is on pace for a 50-point season.
Nice, Dion.
He's a plus. Not like himself. I mean, like his actual plus minus.
Yeah.
And he, did you see how tough he looked last? He was throwing.
No, that's
body.
Old Dion. Old school Dion laying out hip checks, laying
throwing
out hits.
Throwing out the body. And it's
Nurse
so
is
impressive.
A big boy, too. Nurse, yeah. He laid out Nurse on that one, and
did.
Nurse is a big boy.
And good for Dion for, like, skating back off that, because you're not fighting a 19-year-old kid. Like,
also, Nurse might ragdoll him
well,
and embarrass
or his uncle
him.
Might, Donovan McNabb.
Like, Nurse
what?
Is a big boy.
Big shout out. Former co-host Dwayne Turner, nice Eagles reference for you, bud.
That was nice. We slid that in
just
quite subtly. That
just
was nice.
For you.
What I want to slide in next, almost as subtly.
Yeah.
Next segment.
Yeah.
Should we?
Slip it?
Yeah. Slide it. Jays. Made a move.
You mean the J-A's.
The J-A's made a move.
The J-A's are not happy.
Wow. Okay, we're going to stop the puns. But in all seriousness again, Jays made a move to add to the starting rotation.
Yep.
3-year deal for J.A. Happ.
Yep.
Coming back from the Pittsburgh Pirates. What is it, 36 mil? 33?
Yeah, it goes like 11, and then I think it goes 13 and then 14 or something like that.
Okay, we'll say 3 years, 35 million
36
roughly.
Is, no, you're right on the 36.
36. Needed a left-handed arm in the rotation badly.
Yeah.
Everyone in Jays land is pretty upset about this move.
Yeah.
Scratching their heads almost. This is going to be the rotation. Happ is the fifth guy.
Yeah.
The argument for people supporting the deal is Happ as your fifth guy isn't so bad.
He's not, though.
Which I agree with. You can't argue that. But if you're bringing back Happ and not Price, what kind of downgrade is that from your rotation overall?
Well, I think what you're saying is that Marcus Stroman is your ace.
I agree.
You're definitely saying Marco Estrada is your two.
I guess so.
I would say J.A. Happ at $12 million is your three. And I would say R.A. Dickey is pitching in the playoffs if they make it at four. And you're stretching. Guys, Flip is just done. He's just like wiping off the disgust.
I just don't know.
I don't buy it, man. I'm not a fan. What I don't understand is how is $12 million for J.A. Happ more worth spending a couple extra million in, let's even say $10 million, because God forbid the Blue Jays made money.
Yeah, exactly.
And getting going after a guy like, what did Zimmerman make? $5 million? He's at 120?
Something like that.
Like, who can go and do that? It's $25 million. Like, I don't understand how the Blue Jays believe they've reinforced their their rotation. Because this is not Marco Estrada. He didn't prove this in the AL East. And that's what's frustrating to me. Having a pitcher from the National League come into the AL East is like going and playing in the AHL and then playing in literally the last two rounds in the Stanley Cup Finals. This ramps up. This is baseball at its finest when it comes offensively. And J.A. Happ, I don't argue his 11-game streak because People forget 11 games for a pitcher is a third of their yearly output. Mm-hmm. So an 11-game streak is basically a third of a season. I'll give him that.
We're getting pretty heated right now in here.
It's just frustrating to me, and I think this
You're frustrated.
I am frustrated.
I can tell.
I am frustrated.
Let it out.
I think it's not fair for fans of the Toronto Blue Jays to have to ingest potentially adding a third string arm or a third slotted arm,
right,
when they didn't need that. You have that for dirt cheap in your bullpen, like we were saying, in Sanchez and Osuna and Hutchison. You have the question marks that you should gamble on. Why didn't all the money go to the big arm? That's where I'm at.
Where am I? Where's the rotation sit now? Stroman.
Yeah.
Not in order, I'm just saying.
Yeah, Estrada.
Stroman, Estrada. Dickey?
Yep.
And now who am I forgetting?
J.A. Happ.
Okay.
And then no one else.
No, really? I thought there was another guy.
Mark Burley's gone.
I know.
And then David Price.
Hutchison.
And they traded for Jesse Chavez, who had a 4.87 ERA. Oakland? Was it with Oakland?
Yeah, but the thing is his road record was 2-9. Like, he was, like, worse than Hutchison on the road.
So what we do is we play one of them at home, and we play Chavez away or home and vice versa,
but
and we're
then
good?
Where did he pitch good at home? In the Coliseum in Oakland. That thing's, like, cavernous. Like, you could lose a ball in the outfield and literally not find it.
Yeah, like, where the American League MVP could only hit 16 home runs?
Right, it's where hitters go to die, like, kind of like goalies go to die in the East Coast Hockey League.
Yeah,
so
or the Florida
I don't
Panthers.
Think Jesse Chavez?
Yeah, I think it's Jesse. Chavez. Who was a Blue Jay, if I'm not mistaken.
Was a Blue Jay in the Jesse Litch era, but it's just the couple of moves that have happened recently from the Toronto Blue Jays have been a little bit curious, and the thing that worries me about the Happ move is, like you said, it's the NL to the AL move. He finished his season last year in the NL. If you look at his AL to NL stats, they're clearly better in the NL. 100%. He started his career with the Phillies, and he was a highly touted prospect.
Yeah.
But he didn't pan out the way that they thought. He's still a solid arm. I don't think we should, like, crap all over J.A. Happ.
It's not J.A. Happ, though, that we're mad at.
Right. I'm mad a little bit, and Shapiro's start has been a little bit rocky here.
If he doesn't announce Tony LaCava as general manager, I think he's already lost the fan base.
I'm starting to really love LaCava.
He seems like the best guy.
He just seems like your dad's brother.
He's all about flip-flops and socks around.
He's like the guy who's like tying your skates when you're a kid because your dad couldn't make it that time.
Yeah.
It's like your buddy's dad who's just going to be, hey.
Yeah.
Hey, up.
He's all like, Flip, you want a beer? And you're like, I'm only 14. Yeah. He's like, Flip, just have a beer. Don't tell your dad.
Well, see, if he knew me well, he knew it would just be a Mickey of rum. And just like a half a glass of Coke. I used to drink a lot of pop. Now I'm down to like just straight booze. It's a problem.
It's better for you that way.
It's not. It's a problem. Anyway, we don't need that kind of segment. We're doing a Flip's Picks segment, not a Flip's Problem segment.
Yeah, Flip's Picks.
Which is going to need
Crown.
A lot. Yeah. Crown, Jack Daniels.
Johnny Walker.
Cigarettes. No. Okay, in all seriousness, the Jays have a lot of... I keep saying that today, in all seriousness, and I'm not that serious. Anyway.
We never are.
The Jays have a lot of work to do in that front office, and if the rotation is going to be Happ, Dickey, Stroman, Estrada, and either or of Chavez,
Hutchison,
or
Sanchez,
or whoever else, repeating as AL East champs is starting to look unrealistic.
Not when the Boston Red Sox are trying to throw 40
right?
extra million at Price.
So
when Cueto clearly doesn't want to go anywhere where he can't have a chance of winning.
So let's just throw that out there for everyone. There was a report from another GM in the MLB.
An NL GM,
like a legit general manager of a team, said that a source told him the Boston Red Sox are willing to go $30 or $40 million more than any other team.
Yeah.
Flat.
Yeah.
So how much is this kid going to make? And I say kid, he's 29. How much is David Price going
to
make?
The guy's an enigma to me. I don't think he knows what he wants.
He's going
to
stay in the AL East.
I don't know, man. I think I'm a firm believer that there's only so many reasons why a pitcher constantly tells you he loves hitting. I really think the National League does a lot for David Price.
So you think he's going to NL?
I think he has a better chance of going to the NL than returning to the AL East for two reasons.
What's your team then if he goes to the NL?
I would say the LA Dodgers.
Okay, see, I would say Cardinals.
You know what? I've heard the Cardinals, and that makes a lot of sense to me.
Me too. But I just anyway, go ahead.
They're farther back. I know it's weird because the LA Angels were a fantastic team last year, and it's weird they get into the playoffs and they're just not impressive. The LA Dodgers are the opposite in that they're uber impressive, and they keep thinking they're one linchpin away. And I think David Price is that linchpin for the Dodgers.
You think so?
I do. I also think that David Price, he thinks with his heart and then his pocket. He doesn't care about the money because David Price understands the money he's going to make. That's why I have an idea for you. If I'm the Toronto Blue Jays...
I like ideas, by the way.
I would call David Price and say, listen, I don't know how long this team is going to be together, let's be honest. Jose Bautista and Encarnacion have a year each. Yeah. I think I'm only going to be able to really keep one because I clearly can't even afford you.
Ooh. Barebone honesty?
Barebone honesty. You tell him, David, you are going to be the pick of the litter whenever you're a free agent. I will give you 2 years at $45 million a year. Or $40 million a year. You're not handcuffing the organization for the future. You're taking money away from a time where you're essentially going to be rebuilding in 4 years once everybody's old and decrepit.
Love that word.
Right? Such a good word. And what you're doing is you're giving David Price an opportunity to win in a place that he thoroughly enjoyed and still keep his options open for the future if he doesn't. Let's say also in comparison to when we had Roger Clemens, he had 2 years with the Jays, won two Cy Youngs, boom, he was gone.
Two Cy Youngs, two of my favorite years as a young Jays fan.
They couldn't even make the playoffs.
I still have a plastic cup somewhere at my mom's. Actually, we've been giving out so many shout-outs this year, and I haven't shout-out my mom, who is the best woman on the planet.
Mama
Livingstone. Big shout-out to Mama Lisa. I have a cup from one of the games I went to when Clemens and Henken were pitching.
Oh, wow.
When they went back-to-back Cy Youngs, and it's got a picture of both of them on it, and it's a back-to-back Cy Young. Just get a little nostalgic Jays moment for
right.
you. Those days when we had Henken rolling and Clemens rolling, we were just missing the offense that we have in Toronto now. If they could piece the good pitching then with the hitting that they have now, and then look at it again now, they're struggling again to find that stud, to find that bona fide front of the rotation guy. Could Stroman be that guy? Definitely.
In two years.
Is he yet? No. And the rest of the AL East was put on notice last year. You swatted them all away. The Jays embarrassed the East last year, the Yankees especially. So be careful this year because they're going to retool and they're going to come after you hard. Perfect example, Bo Sox are coming out and making statements about splashing $40 million extra on top of the next closest offer.
It's sad. It's really sad. I mean, like, one of, I'd say, the biggest godfathers in baseball sports journalism is Shai Davidi.
Ooh, Shai Diggity.
And he was one of our profs. And when Shai speaks, it's never a thought. It's never an idea. It's always as factual as it can be.
Very articulate, man.
And you know what? He is, I would say, one of the epitomes of sports journalism. He's unreal.
He's definitely in the top five of my Canadian broadcasters, up there with Dan Shulman and men like that.
And when you have a guy like Shai coming out saying, I think the Jays are done because they still have arbitration situations that need to be done, and let's be honest, it's a $140 million payroll.
Mm-hmm.
I think that puts a big frowny face on the entire city of Toronto because how did you only gain $2 million of payroll? I think ultimately if the Blue Jays miss this window, we're going to be looking at another 10 years of having to get back to that window.
Mm.
And it's going to be very disheartening.
I agree.
We're not looking for the Jays to have to win a World
Series,
but
they've
got
to
compete.
You know, I hope the playoffs last year wasn't a one and done because I could see them slipping right back into, maybe not this year because the team's still so good, but mediocrity pretty soon. Speaking of slipping out of time windows, how are we doing on time?
Oh, we're still good. We're still good. Yeah, I had my segue queued up and everything, and you moved away from it. I was going to say, speaking of a team that's been slipping, and hopefully the playoffs aren't a one-hit wonder for them, is the Toronto Raptors.
But man, where are we going? You're going Raptors? What about my new segment?
Oh, that's true. See that? We can't even get our own segues down, and we invented this show.
Mr. TSN came in here today and was like, Flip, your intro's no good. You got to fix the intro. You got to have a segment. We got to have segments. And here he is skipping my segment. So with all that said, here is Flip's inaugural picks. What we're going to do here is I'm going to lay out three picks of the night that I think are worthy of you having another look at, whether it's just for watching, just for fun, whatever you do in your own time. I'm going to hit you with three picks that I think are bound to come through. We're going to look at the ice tonight. Philadelphia Flyers are taking the Ottawa Senators on. I really like this spot for Ottawa. Philly's won a couple games in a row, but I like Ottawa here at home. Take Ottawa to win by, I would say, a solid puck.
Nice
maybe,
puck.
Maybe two pucks.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Moving on to my second pick that I like. The Florida Panthers, not a very solid road team, are on the road in St. Louis. Maybe the best home team in the league, Joe. You're not going to pull the rabbit out of the hat with this pick, but St. Louis at home, solid pick. Great home team, playing solid hockey. Take the Blues tonight at home. My third pick, which I'm going to make the upset pick. We're going to kibosh the other one because I'm not feeling it.
Okay.
Joe, I think, is also on board with this pick. Columbus is playing Montreal tonight. The announcement's just come out again that Carey Price is going to be out for an extended period of time. Mike Condon is in the net going up against Sergei Bobrovsky. I like the matchup for Columbus in net. Columbus is playing better of late. Decent road team. Take Columbus for the upset in Montreal tonight. I'll say 4-2 final to even predict the score.
Oh, look at that. 4-2 Columbus.
Columbus by two. Getting a little juicy for Flip's picks. It's the inaugural segment. We're going to keep it tight. But if you need any more picks, you can always check it out at fliplivingstone.com or at sportsfromthe6 at Twitter. So whatever you guys want. The picks are going to keep rolling, Joe. What do you think?
I like it.
How was that?
I think it was really good.
It was tight, right? It was short?
It was very tight.
Concise.
It was solid nut, nice and tight.
Mm.
Good bridge.
Yeah, good bridge.
It was fantastic.
Maybe next week I'll have a little bit more stats. I won't just tell you, like, pick this, pick that. But, hey, you know, Joe comes in here, he starts.
Here's the thing. If you keep winning, you don't have to give stats, right?
Right. So Ottawa, St. Louis, Columbus.
There you go.
We'll keep a running tally on my picks so we can see how good and or bad probably I will be.
Yeah, if he starts getting bad, we'll do Joe's picks where I put pizza on my picks on the floor and my dog chooses the pizza slice and then that's what we go with.
Or if I'm really good, I'm probably going to become way too big time for this show and then have to get my own site.
Yeah, exactly.
But probably not.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, getting too big for their own site.
To their britches.
What? Toronto Raptors, let's talk about it. Playing decent ball. Better than the last time we were in the booth, Joe.
That's true.
They're playing better, and you know what? As much as we were getting on their stars, Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan, I still think that is a talented backcourt and got to be top five in the league.
Yeah.
When they play their game. Also, I think what I want to bring up first is when Jonas Valanciunas went down, you said, JV, 7 foot. Number one draft pick. Who needs this guy?
Yeah,
who needs him? You said that.
I did.
And I went, I don't know, Joe. I think maybe you're smoking that funny stuff out of your vape today.
Yeah.
But hey, Bismack Biyombo has played solid basketball and has made the absence of Jonas Valanciunas less felt. Good call, pal.
Well, that's honestly, I'm not trying to sit here and say I'm the swami. I just, you know.
The swam.
Yeah, the salami. But I just looked at the five spot for the Raptors, and I don't think it's the straw that mixes the drink. And
wow.
You know what? The failures of Jonas Valanciunas to me has always been his weakness
the
on the
failures.
Board.
Failures. AK's going to kill
he
you.
He hates me. I know he hates
me. Oh, by the way, we forgot our token shout-out to Ali Khanrav, Johnny. We love you.
Big shout-out.
He's going to be upset.
He's going to be so mad. He was messaging our Facebook group, and he was like, you're nuts. He's good. And I'm like, AK, honestly, I don't see it. When I look at Valanciunas' absence, all I've realized is the Raptors are – Bismack Biyombo had 16 boards one game. He's been a monster in the paint.
He's been a Pops Mensah Bonsu reincarnated.
Right? How did you say that name?
Pops, Mensa, Bansu.
Okay, so now say Bismack Biyombo and then that right after.
Bismack Biyombo, Pops, Mensa, Bansu, meet me down in South Africa.
There you go. That's unreal.
Boom.
That is unbelievable. So, okay.
Love you.
He's gone and you have Biyombo in there who's playing solid, who's just doing his job. And I mean, listen, people might forget the Chicago Bulls were successful because they had a rebounder. A significant, the best of all time,
the
Dennis
worm?
Rodman.
The worm.
The guy snatched it out of everybody's hands. But when he had to put up points, he could. He's a different story. But
are you drawing comparisons between Bismack and Dennis Rodman right now?
No, I'm drawing comparisons to having a big man have a specific duty and
Thank
not
you.
Be an offensive juggernaut.
I'll stop talking.
Right? But then again, we look at the Raptors, and I think I'm the only negative person on the Toronto Raptors.
You've been pretty negative.
I have been.
Like, AK's actually upset at you.
He's going to be so mad at me. I look at, they lose to the Suns. Okay.
Suns are a mediocre team.
Right?
Average?
Yeah.
Average.
Average. The Raptors are a playoff contender.
In the East.
In the East, but still.
Just saying.
And then you win a game the night before, and yeah, flip. DeMar and Kyle Lowry. It's funny. I really don't have anything bad to say about both Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. I think Kyle Lowry's a star, definitely all star.
Bulldog.
But why would? But Corey Joseph's hitting that three. And it's not that just happens on a random basis. It's always been like that for the last 2-3 years with the Raptors. It's not a consistent guy.
Well, we've mentioned it, right? And I think it's worth talking about because now it's a thing. Before, it was kind of like, oh, they're not ready yet. We'll give them a year. You know, they haven't played in the playoffs. Give them that. Now it's a couple of playoffs. Now it's a few years together. And we've said it. Maybe they're not the clutch guys. Maybe they don't want the ball. Deep down, are they ever going to say that? No. But do they feel that maybe it's like, oh, maybe we'll throw it to Corey Joe? Who knows if they're feeling that? We might never know. But what's going on the court, you have to question. Is it it's a hype thing to see a guy from Toronto hit a game-winning shot for his hometown team. That's awesome. That's great for Toronto. That's great for Toronto sports, basketball Ontario. It's just, you know, a positive. But when you look at it overall, how you were just looking at it through that lens, should that not be Kyle Lowry's shot? Should that not be DeMar's shot? Probably, don't you think?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And the thing is, I don't mind if they miss that shot.
Yeah, they should be taking it.
And that's the thing. The problem is, I always thinking back to a conversation I had with a friend of mine once. I said to him, when Vince Carter missed that 3-point shot, were you not okay with it because Vince Carter took that shot? Like, in the end, when you look back on it,
in the end, in the comparison,
was Oakley
going to
take that shot?
In the comparison you were making on, like, who's the guy to have the ball?
Right.
Of course, I was happy that it was Vince. That Vince thing is a whole other ballgame because he went to his grad thing and everything.
Sure, sure. But I'm just saying.
Yes, but yes, in terms of he was the guy that should have had it.
Yeah, let's not pretend to say that if just because he went to his grad, he missed a 3-point shot. It doesn't correlate that way.
No, but it was still a gutless move.
That's
not what we're talking
about.
But
that's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is when push comes to shove in the last second of the game, the best player on the court, arguably on the court, next to Allen Iverson that night, was Vince Carter, and he was playing for the Toronto Raptors. And he had the shot to ice it, and he missed. You're not going to think about that over the offseason, like, what if we did this? How come we didn't do that? Blah, blah, blah. I still look back at that series against Brooklyn.
I was just going to say.
And I think about it, and I don't think I wanted Kyle Lowry to have that shot.
Because he had the last shot. He had the rock against, was it Paul Pierce that stuffed
him? Well, yeah, he drove on Paul Pierce, yeah.
He drove on Paul Pierce. All the guys on the team then said, that's the guy who we wanted to have the ball. They all supported him and said it, including DeMar.
Right.
And I think they honestly believe it.
Sure.
But does Kyle Lowry believe it? That's the question.
And I think that is the biggest question, because you look at Lowry and he looks to dish late in games. His assist totals like rise near the end of the game because he's getting everyone else involved.
Yeah.
And
great team guy. I love that he expects the most out of his teammates.
And you know what? He gives the most to his teammates. And yeah. this is not a deterring factor on him. I think he's awesome. I just think about what this club has as a collective, and what they have as a collective is a lack of a number one. A number one guy. And
yeah,
you know,
we talked about it for
and
sure.
And you know who's great? And AK's going to like pull his hair out right now. Mm. You know who's great at doing both? LeBron James.
I love this. I love LeBron.
Listen, I'm not personally like one-on-one. You guys know me and LeBron, we don't get along. He doesn't send me Christmas cards anymore. I don't send him mine. But LeBron James shares the rock. LeBron James gets the team active. But you know what LeBron James learned after the first year with the Big Three? It's not. It's LeBron featuring. Mm. Because that's what you need to do to succeed. LeBron James takes the ball against Chicago. That three, I looked at a friend of mine. I slapped him in the chest. I'm like, LeBron's going to drain this. They're going to win with 1.2 seconds left. He goes, no, they're not going to do it. LeBron drains it. Just puts his hands up against Chicago last year in the playoffs.
Yeah, and
you don't have that. And I know it's LeBron James.
Right.
It's a big,
and that's, it's LeBron James.
But there's, you know, let's James Harden. There's Westbrook. There's Durant. There's Steph Curry. There's, you know, there's guys. You got to have one.
The leash has to be short on this core of players.
For sure.
If not, I start to question the guys that I haven't questioned, and Masai and the guys in the front office for the Raptors. I actually really like Kyle Lowry, the player. The things you've just mentioned, he's a heart and soul guy. He's a bulldog. He really plays with his heart on his sleeve. But I see him as like the unsung quiet leader. It's like you need him, but then you need, like you said, you know, we'll go back to the comparison. A guy like LeBron, more of a vocal guy, more of a guy who's like leads by clutch example, you know,
right.
Like
you need an on-court presence
we're talking,
that can take over.
We're talking ideal scenarios in the best player in the league with LeBron James.
Yeah.
But hopefully people understand the point we're trying to make here with that.
But again, you can downgrade that, right? Like the Raptors tried to get a guy like LaMarcus Aldridge, who's
right.
like your kind
you
of
go.
Secondary star. Even still, it's – I'm not saying – a guy with a personality of, say, a Rudy Gay who can actually score,
mm.
who's not a high
I hate
volume –
Rudy Gay.
Most Toronto do. But
top three with Paul Pierce – and I'm also starting to really hate the Lopez brothers, but we don't need to get into that.
Mine are Hato Turkoglu, Hato Turkoglu,
Ball.
And Hato Turkoglu.
Ball.
Okay, not a fan. But if the Raptors were to have somebody who have that ice in their veins late in the game, who is able to be consistent throughout the entire game.
Yeah.
I mean, they had that. They thought they had that in Lou Williams. I don't know. The Raptors have always had that like guy who shouldn't be shooting. Like, I love Mo Pete, but somehow Mo Pete has all the greatest Raptors three-pointers of all time.
And they're all complete prayers.
He's the gem.
It's just like, you can see he's just like, oh, my God, this is going to be no
yes,
10.
Yeah. And then, like, even before, and then after that, you had the Donyell Marshall, who would hit all the threes, who would hit all, like,
I love Donyell.
Random, and again, ice in his veins, but
that one corner spot, he was just steady in the
literally,
corner.
Literally, they wrote his
cash,
name.
Cash. Corner along the bench. It's like he liked it, so he could just sit back down once he cashed the three.
He was like the cheat code in, like, the NBA Street Volume 2.
I just love that you said cheat code, because we're going to wrap this show up with a player who played his whole career in pretty much cheat code
yeah,
mode.
Yeah, and superstar.
Kobe Bryant has been taking a lot of heat in the media
for
a while
years.
Now. But lately, because of not playing well, being injured more, being selfish, not being a good teammate, not giving the young players time to shine when he should maybe step out of the limelight, I've given him heat. You've helped me edit a piece where I wrote almost a year ago where I thought Kobe should have retired last season.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant came out this week and said something, I don't know exactly what it is, you can Google it for yourself, but pretty much to the effect of, this man is a legend, one of the best to ever play our game, and the way that you've been treating him, like the way the media has been treating him, is appalling.
Kevin Durant's also very salty when it comes to
Kevin Durant has been that guy who's just calling people out the past 2 years. He kind of just doesn't care anymore.
No.
But the point, I get it, they're athletes. I don't feel bad for them when media get on them, but I think Kobe's legacy, maybe not legacy, but reputation has been tarnished a bit the way he's gone out. And I just think this last week when he's announced that he's officially going to hang them up after this season, I think is the first step in the direction of a classy exit for him. If it can be salvaged, I don't know. And I'm interested to see, to hear what you think about it. I was probably the biggest Kobe fan up until LeBron entered the league and I had another player to follow. I loved Kobe. Kobe was one of the best ever, one of the best Lakers. And I just think, you know, we have to show him a little bit of love. His career, that 81 points against the Raptors, was probably one of the craziest things I've ever watched.
For me, Kobe Bryant is epitomized in his ability to just win. Kobe Bryant is forever going to be a five-time champion. Kobe Bryant is forever going to be arguably, because we still are waiting on LeBron James, the best player since Michael Jordan.
Can't argue with that.
The problem with Kobe Bryant is that me is significantly in his vocabulary. And that's what guys ultimately don't like. If you're a good person, and we saw this in Toronto with Anthopoulos, if you're a good person, the media will love you and they'll make you a darling. When you're a guy who refuses to ever soften up or refuses to ever be someone that's loved, unless you are in a specific situation where you're happy with it or comfortable, like you kind of set the
tone. Or you live in California,
right?
And love Kobe exactly. Anyway.
It's tough to love the guy. However, there is no one you can respect more on the court than Kobe Bryant. The guy was an absolute pro to the T. Kobe Bryant deserved to be shooting as much as he wanted for the last 17 to 16 years, as long as he's been in the league, up until the last 2 years.
Well, we were just talking about the lack of clutch performances from guys on the Raptors. The lack of ice-in-your-veins performances. The lack of wanting the ball when the pressure's on the most. And I mean, not regular season. I'm talking elimination playoff games, championship games where the games are on the line. And Kobe was that dude five times over. People are like, oh, he won with Shaq. Shaq was key in those on those Lakers teams, but who carried those teams? Let's be real. It was
right.
Kobe.
But Kobe, it was proven, though, Kobe could not win without a legitimate, solid big man. He needed a game-changing big man.
I don't think that detracts from him, though.
No, I don't think so either. And I don't
right.
think you
no,
have...
No, I didn't... I wasn't.
No, I know you're not
I get
arguing.
Your point. I get your point. I just think he's... He's just so good. And I just, as much as I like to hate on the guy, I would have really liked to see him play okay this year. Maybe even if it's just like 15 points a game off the bench.
Yeah.
And he accepted that role and just was a solid team guy. It's just a shame because, you know, I wanted to love this guy. I wanted to love him the whole way long.
Yeah.
And like you made a great point with it. It's just, he's just such a,
he's a
you
sour
talked about
guy.
Salty. He's yeah. worse than that. He's just. I can't put my finger on it to describe his attitude. It's because sometimes, you know, he's kind of funny. He comes off as, you know, a cocky
right.
athlete. But then other times you just literally want to punch this guy square in the mouth.
I think the one credit I will always give Kobe Bryant is he's perma stink face. Like, he's never not ready to go. You look at DeMar DeRozan was talking about how he grew up watching Kobe and it was amazing to play against him, and he's 4-5 against their meetings against him, and he plays a lot with those guys in the Drew League and stuff. They mess around together. You can see little like flashes of the kid in DeMar DeRozan trying to emulate Kobe in the stink face, just jamming the ball down in
right.
and like giving the shoulder pump. But Kobe Bryant was like that at tip off.
Mm-hmm.
Kobe Bryant.
Practice.
All
practice,
the time.
He's ready.
He never stops fighting guys off. He never stops battling. Kobe Bryant is the epitome of what you want a leader to be on the court. He wants to win.
He's a perfectionist.
And I think for everybody that has watched the Black Mamba, you have had the opportunity of witnessing the highest level of greatness we've seen since the King himself. And we're lucky that we have another one to watch after in LeBron, but Kobe Bryant was special. And for everybody that forgets that, when Kobe Bryant is gone, everyone, and me included, will miss watching the Lakers. And I think a little part of the Lakers will be gone when Kobe leaves.
A little part of the Lakers will be gone. And I want to wrap this up in two ways. The first being, Kobe's legacy and I think impact on the game is something that we still see, like you just said, with guys like DeMar.
Yeah.
And I think that is hopefully what people remember and not the injured, lippy, selfish Kobe that we've seen most of, because he earned the respect of a Hall of Famer and he should be remembered in that way. And second, and how I want to wrap it up is in how we remember Kobe. Do you have a favorite or a memory of Kobe, an image, a time, a game, a performance that sticks out in your mind, good or bad? Just what you are going to remember about Kobe. Something that, you know, I mentioned the 81-point game. That's one that sticks out for me. I'll go with my memory while you think about it, because I think you're still thinking about it.
I got
it.
A couple.
Okay. Mine is his last championship. I think it was 2010.
Yeah.
The one he won, quote unquote, on his own.
Yeah.
Although Pau Gasol was pretty nasty in that playoff, I believe. And I just remember he won the MVP as well, I think. And he was just dancing with the trophies. And then he was just counting rings. He was counting 1, 2, 3, counting the fingers, 4, counting to the 5, and then showing, you know, I just won the 5th.
Yeah.
And I just remembered being like, I want to slap all those smirks off his face right now. And then being like, wait, no. He's way too good. Yeah. And he actually earned that right to be that cocky. And that's how I'll probably remember Kobe.
I think I will forever remember Kobe for his awkward shooting. He has the weirdest shot. He like kind of pushes the ball and he posts up on a guy, or steps up on a guy on the 3-point line, and he has his patented fadeaway pushing forward and then gets down and looks at the crowd when he's away. And he gives you the, you guys thought I was going to miss that? That's how I remember Kobe. Just his swagger, his fight. The game I will never forget, obviously, is the 81 points. I think that, as a Toronto fan, is a memory. But I'm like you. I think my favorite memory is Kobe hoisting his last championship, confetti falling down on him. Mm-hmm. And I think a part of him knew that was the most I had, and it worked. And I gave it up. And Kobe Bryant will forever be, I think, a legend of our time.
Legend of our time, for sure. One of the best athletes we had a privilege as, what are we, middle 20-year-old?
Yeah.
We'll call it that.
Mid-midlifers.
We're mid-midlifers that us mid-midlifers got to experience.
Yeah.
And it's a shame to see him go. It's a shame to see you go as well, pal.
We got to wrap.
You know, but it's not as sad for us, because we will be back for episode number 27, Joe. Hopefully sooner than later, because I think everyone's starting to really love us.
I think so. Who wouldn't? You better.
So with that being said, I'm Flip Livingstone for Joe Narsa and Ali Khan Ravjani signing out.
Later, guys.